There's power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hands of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union, the union forever defending our rights. Down with the blackleg, all workers unite with our brothers and our sisters in many far-off lands. There is power in a union. Now the lessons of the past we all learned with workers' blood. The mistakes of the bosses we must pay for. From the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud. War has always been the boss's way, sir. The union forever defending our rights. Down with the blackleg, all workers unite with our brothers and our sisters in many far-off lands. There is power in a union. Now I long for the morning that they realize unjust laws can't defeat us, but who'll defend the workers who cannot organize when the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us? Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort to the widow, a light to the child. There is power in a union.
Greetings, fellow workers and listeners out there in Radio Land. This is the time of our show where we like to do some introductions. I'm going to start with the person on my left. It's a fellow worker, Noah, if you'd like to start us off.
Can do. My name is fellow worker Noah. My pronouns are he, him. I am the branch secretary of the Tacoma IWW and also a co-host and producer here for WOB Radio. And on to my left is fellow worker Al.
Hi, my name is Alan. I've been a member for a long time, and he, him are my choices.
I'm Lynn. I'm a fellow worker that's been a member since about 2018. I'm proud to be a member. I'm a union person from a union family.
My name is Marilyn. I go by she, they. I'm a delegate, so if you want to join the union, contact me. I've been a member since 2008, and I'm a retired mental health worker, community mental health worker. Oh. And I'm also a member of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee and one of the co-producers of Radio WOB Radio.
And my name is fellow worker Gordon. I live in Bremerton, but I'm a member of the Tacoma General Membership Branch of the Industrial Workers of the World. I use he, him pronouns. I'm a retired shipyard worker after 35 years, and I've been a member of the IWW since 2008.
And fellow worker Lynn is now going to read us a section of the preamble to the Constitution of the IWW. Whenever you're ready, fellow worker Lynn.
The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. We find that the centering of the management of industries into fewer and fewer hands makes the trade unions unable to cope with the ever-growing power of the employing class. The trade unions foster a state of affairs which allows one set of workers to be pitted against another set of workers in the same industry, thereby helping defeat one another in wage wars. Moreover, the trade unions and the employing class to mislead our workers into the belief that the working class have interests in common with their employers.
We will go ahead and move on now to labor news. A regular section of our WOB radio program is to keep our fellow listeners informed as to what's going on in the wider world of organized labor. Who would like to go ahead and start? Fellow worker Gordon?
Oh, okay. Recently, I heard on a very brief segment on the commercial mainstream media that Texas has introduced a law in their state legislature to prevent local municipal governments from instituting ordinances that require workers to have breaks for water and for rest. Now, mind you, this is in the middle of a heat wave, middle of climate change, and guess who the workers are that are most affected? Those of us who work outside. Agricultural workers, power pole guys, you know, construction people, anybody who works outside is going to suffer from dehydration and the effects of heat. And I found this article, and this comes from a local Texas newspaper, and the newspaper is El Paso Matters, and the article is by a fellow worker named Brandy Ruiz, and she published this on July the 4th, just a couple of days ago. Oh, did Texas ban cities from mandating that businesses provide heat and water breaks for workers? And the answer is a resounding yes. A state law passed in June 2023 prevents local governments in Texas that mandating businesses implement practices such as employment leave and breaks that exceed or conflict with federal or state local law for employers. The bill went into effect September 1st, 2023, even after a state district judge called it unconstitutional. The House Bill 2127 eliminates such local ordinances statewide. Gee, what happened to local control? What happened to small business? I don't know. Including mandated water breaks for construction workers, like those previously adopted in Austin and Dallas, hotbeds of liberalism, as is well known. The law does not affect labor requirements set by private employers or organizations who can create their own guidelines on water breaks. And she goes on to say that there's a similar law in, guess where, Florida, that is preventing governments from establishing mandates on heat exposure. Okay, so two of the hottest states in our country, the United States, right, who have arguably some of the worst governments in the entire country, are preventing workers from, you know, preventing city governments from saying these guys and gals have to have water every so often.
They
have
to have just a, for, just relating to city government.
What the state government has done is supersede local ordinances, and the local ordinances are from cities that experience brutal heat in the summer.
So have they actually enforced that?
I don't know if they've enforced it, if they started cracking heads yet, but it is a law on the books, and they are city governments are being prevented. Now, this doesn't mean that, you know, a local employer or, you know, even the workers themselves couldn't bring a water cooler. Well, what this law does, it codifies the prohibition on mandates for worker safety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so this, to me, is egregious in the extreme. It is senselessly cruel. It is affecting the people, and we know who people who are working construction are and working in the fields, right? These are, a lot of them are black and brown and poor white people doing agricultural work, construction work, etc., laborers work. And so what's happening is that they're going to have to be, you know, take personal responsibility for bringing their own water. But if you interpret the law in the extreme, they won't be allowed to have take time to have a break. In other words, you don't get a 15-minute, you know, water break and shade break every hour or two, which should be on the books, in my opinion.
This almost reminds me of a similar situation in Florida. I believe it was about a year ago. It's not directly correlated to things like rest breaks and somewhat. But there was a mandate passed by the state government that basically says we will not let undocumented immigrants work in our country anymore, and we're going to be more heavily policing industries like construction and agricultural work to hunt out undocumented immigrants and get them out of the state or deport them. And what happened was a mass exodus of workers, including plenty of people who are either green card holders or citizens of the United States, who just threw up their hands and said, if you're going to affect those people, if you're going to be over-policing us in terms of who's working for us, we're just going to leave.
And I think that was, unless it happened more recently again, it happened several years ago in Georgia. And all the peaches went to rot that year. I mean, it's like, and because they were going to not let kids that weren't documented into schools. And so it's like families had no choice but to leave that community. be.
Right.
Those communities. And so amazing. Yeah, that was, so it might have happened again, but it did happen in Georgia.
Well, how woke of those silly governments to allow people to have water, you know, in 110 degree heat.
Unbelievably cruel. Just
Well, it kind of also reminds me of the voting restrictions, where people standing in line for hours, if somebody comes up and gives them water, they're violating a law.
It's election interference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unreal. Just the cruelty.
But the reason why I was thinking about that Florida situation and undocumented workers, it kind of makes me think that a possible situation could happen here as well. You know, there could be a large body of workers who just openly do not participate with this new legislation that's been pushed through, as you mentioned. Mm. And so it would kind of result in a situation where the laws on the books now say you don't have to provide water or rest breaks for people who are working in specifically high heat situations. The workers could probably just ignore those rules anyway and force management to come to the table about it, especially if they're already an organized workplace or if there's an organization campaign going on. So it kind of makes me believe that one of two things is going to happen. Either the workers en masse do not put up with that crap, or, like in the case of Florida and Georgia, they're just going to up and leave, which mm-hmm. is going to significantly hurt their economy. And then they're going to, and then I'm sure the Texas government's going to blame the Department of Labor or something mm-hmm. about it, even though it was their fault. So, yeah, it kind of sounds like they're shooting themselves in the foot here.
They don't give it a damn about that. They don't care. This is all ideological. Brandi Ruiz finishes up her article by saying California, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado are the only states that have laws outlining requirements for workers facing outdoor heat exposure. Minnesota has a law, this might amuse you, Minnesota has a law regulating indoor heat exposure, which makes sense to me. But anyway, it's interesting to me that so few legislatures in the country have mandated protection for workers in this regard. And to deny people water, that's straight up Nazi.
Hundreds die in these heat waves every year. California, several in Washington State a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cycle, and so it's really hot in the summer, but and the temperature's always taken in the shade. And so if it's 115 degrees out, it's like 130 in the sun,
mm-hmm.
because it's always measured in the shade. And so that is not something that humans are supposed to survive.
And God forbid it's humid out, too, because that means the temperature transmits a lot more to the physical body.
Right. On the East Coast, currently, today, I saw a weather report that had Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, having a heat index of over 110, like around 115. And that's because of on the East Coast, if any of the listeners have ever been to the East Coast in the summer or grew up there, you know that the humidity can get you.
Yeah.
It can knock you flat.
Sad state of affairs out of Texas, in mm-hmm. other words. Al, did you have a story about Fungi Perfecti?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
I love the name.
Fungi Perfecti is a company in Olympia owned by Paul Stamets. And Paul Stamets is a worldwide noted authority on mushrooms.
Oh, he's a genius.
Got books. He can type. Somebody typed for him. And when he started the company, he sold kits to grow mushrooms. He did that for a while and then realized, I guess, he changed his attitude. And another company started which provided the kits, etc. All that Fungi Perfecti did was grow mushrooms for medicinal purposes only.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey tail is a mushroom. Allegedly has some benefit for cancer patients. The point of this is, now that they just grow mushrooms, encapsulate them, put them in bottles, and sell them, the staff at Fungi Perfecti wants to organize a union. And Stamets' response to that is, this information all came from The Stand, which is the Washington State Labor Council daily email report. So that's where I got this. The workers there have approached the Labor's Union 252 to help them organize. And what Stamets has done is he has hired the one of the most expensive union-busting law firms in the country. They represent, the union busters represent Starbucks, perhaps Microsoft. I don't know.
So he's an evil genius.
Oh, yeah.
Just to give a shout out to the specific union that they're organizing with, that's going to be LIUNA 252 local.
Oh, they're a good outfit.
And for the listener, what does that stand for?
Labor's Union.
Labor's International Union of North America.
That's right.
LIUNA.
252. And that local is in Tacoma.
I've Centralia. Seen the signs, yeah.
Also.
Huh?
In Centralia also.
Well, okay.
They represent a large area. Yeah.
But their office, I think, is here in Tacoma.
Okay.
They're part of the Mason, Lewis, Thurston Central Labor Council.
Okay.
For some goofy reason. Anyway, we will return to Local 252 when we get the Centralia report. So I wanted to say that there's dissatisfied workers at Fungat Perfecti, and they chose the laborers to organize them themselves. So we'll see what happens.
All right.
But that's all I got to say about that.
Fungi.
But that's really interesting.
Fungi imperfecti. That's a good one.
That's really interesting. Stamets, what was he thinking?
Money. Control. Power. Mm-hmm. What are the usual reasons? I mean,
yeah.
Did people see his film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to present a labor news article about the union reaction to the presidential debate. I have not really been able to find any specific union sources, though, so I can't really add too much context for this particular article of labor news, at least from a specific source. Obviously, a lot of the labor unions are backing the Democrats because the Democrats are obviously, or at the very least, they have a pro-labor stance to their messaging and some of the work that they do more on local levels, but there has been a lot of noted concern over Biden's performance at the debates. A lot of Democrats were even wondering if he was going to be stepping down potentially and letting another presidential candidate take his race, but Biden doubled down and said that he wants to see this all the way through to the end. So we can cover a little bit more of that in our roundtable discussion about election season going on right now. But yeah, just to kind of give a preamble of what's to come.
Dive in.
All right. Who watched the debates? Let's just open up with that.
Nope.
I couldn't.
I did.
Didn't want to.
Yeah.
I heard it, though. I heard it in the back of the room, yeah.
As usual, it was Trump throwing out a bunch of completely unrelated topics from a specifically conservative point of view, and Biden trying to respond to that and the question that the moderators were putting forward at the same time. So it kind of looked like he was struggling pretty hard just to try and keep up. You know, as I've led into this with from the previous section on labor news, there are a lot of people within liberal or socially and economically progressive circles who are worried about how the Democrats are performing this election season. There's a lot of...
That's an understatement.
Well, yes. And that's not to say that they haven't done good work over the past 4 years of Biden being in office. I'll definitely give them credit where credit is due. Even though they busted the rail workers union, they did eventually negotiate with the rail workers and their employers to try and figure out to find a way to give those rail workers better sick hours. I'll give them that much credit. They've also staffed the NLRB with people who are at the very least in favor of labor unions and very protective of labor unions in their organizing campaigns.
Great. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, wait. You think that Biden did good things for the rail workers?
Well, they had to do...
He's the guy who threatened to put him in jail.
Well, yes.
If they didn't go back to work.
Yes.
And that's not happy talk.
No, and I understand. That was the initial reaction of the entire Congress when they heard the rail workers were going to go on strike. And I'm not going to forget that. On the other hand, they did later come back around and essentially do backdoor negotiations with the rail workers and their employers to figure out a way to give them sick
hours.
You
put them in jail and the trains don't run.
Well, yes.
That's the obvious.
Yes. They were very reactionary to how they handled that, which is why I think Biden has been trying to warm up a little bit more to labor unions, like walking a picket line with the UAW, which has never happened in presidential history.
That was a photo op. He put the hat on and walked to his car and drove away.
Well, yes.
Rounds of applause for that.
Yeah.
Again.
Did he hold the Bible right side up or upside down?
Jesus. So.
We'll be hard on you, bud. Keep it up.
I know. And don't get me wrong. I'm trying to give credit where credit is due here.
Well, maybe it's not really due.
Oh. Okay.
I'll give you that. All I'm saying is that people are especially from the socially progressive part of the country, are really trying to scrape the barrel on what can we say.
They are scrambling, trying to find some positives.
Right.
And there are some things that aren't totally negative.
Mm-hmm.
His energy policy has been important.
Mm-hmm.
His, oh my God, the pushing the electrification of cars,
mm-hmm.
and the charging stations. And we still don't have a national grid, but that's... You know, he's tried to do some things, and he's working again up. He's fighting an upriver battle because he's got Senate and he's got Congress that are standing in the way.
Right. The House of Representatives is majority Democratic, but the Senate is majority Republican, if I'm
right.
Remembering.
No, backwards.
Here's
my apologies.
Chance to interject this. Once upon a time, didn't the Democrats control both the House and the Senate?
Yes,
multiple
times.
A short period of time.
And
what
was the federal wage then?
$7.25.
And what is it today?
$7.25.
That's what you said. I thought you said that.
Yeah.
When the Democrats were in control of most of the stuff.
Right.
What happened?
And even Biden had both the Senate and the Congress for a short period of time. And
Nothing happened.
Well, with the filibuster, they probably didn't have enough votes if the Republicans filibustered.
No, he was playing softball when he first took office.
And right. If the Republicans filibustered to shut down an increase in the minimum wage, you think we'd all hear about it, wouldn't we? Because they don't want that. So it would just be a reminder.
Mm-hmm.
They're not our friends.
But if you look at the Republican candidate, who is so abominable and horrendous and fascist and snort-like, Biden looks like candy.
Yeah.
But the thing is, are we going to fall? Cotton candy, yes. Are we going to
fluffy
fall?
With no substance? Oops.
Personally, I see people all around me that are so horrified at Biden's position helping Israel out with military equipment and armaments against Palestinians that they're either not going to vote or they're going to vote against him. They're going to throw their vote away. Or they might even vote for Biden. They're feeling so outraged and so angry. And I'm talking about a whole generation of young voters. Now, I know you disagree with me, Noah,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see how Biden can win if he doesn't have young voters.
I have an easy answer. Desperation. He is ultimately, like you said, when you compare Trump and Biden together... Biden is the obvious choice if you don't want, for example, worse things to happen to people who are seeking out an abortion or people who are trying to maintain their civil rights in this country, especially if they're from a marginalized group who want to push forward further green energy policy, stuff like that. It doesn't mean that he's good at it. It doesn't mean that the Democratic Party is good at it. But at the very least, the Democratic Party will not do the kinds of things that Trump did. Trump, from 2016 to 2020, definitely did things that a Democratic president would not do and would not get away with,
but
quite
Noah,
frankly.
With the climate crisis, and they're now saying we have all of 2 years left, 2 years left, before the tipping point has been passed, and there is no coming back. We're talking about survival here. It's looking so desperate, and mm-hmm. people are feeling so angry and hopeless that some people are going to refuse to vote at all.
And I completely understand that. A third of this country that's eligible to vote doesn't vote for the majority of the past.
100 million.
Yeah, 100 million people do not turn out to vote. And there's absolutely an argument to be made there that because the two major parties that are wanting to represent, hopefully, the gross majority of Americans who can turn out and vote, you know, these are our options. You have somebody who is charitably at best occasionally incompetent and on the other team is actively evil, like,
and incompetent all the time,
right? And even with a lot of my friends who, well, yeah, no, Trump is definitely got way more incompetent than Biden when it comes to a lot of these issues, or just actively makes things worse. The thing for me, and this is kind of a philosophy I've held even before I became a wobbly or even moved more to the political left where I am now, is that I don't vote for a candidate because I like the candidate that I'm being presented with. I vote for a candidate essentially because the opposite faction, the opposite majority faction, is actively worse.
Okay, so it's the old lesser evil.
Exactly.
Yeah, and a lot of people are fed up with lesser evil because they see that it's over time, it's made things go progressively more and more and more over to the right. As you said earlier before we started the program, if the Democrats play by the rules and the Republicans don't, where does it get this? Where does it get us?
The other half of my opinion on elections and electoral politics and things is that if your only engagement with politics begins and ends at the ballot box, then you are functionally achieving nothing.
Yes, I agree with that.
Which is my main motivation for wanting to be in a union and be active in what there is of a labor movement in this country. I think that a lot of people think the popular American conception of politics begins and ends at the ballot box. It begins and ends with the party of more evil or lesser evil, depending on what particular stance you have on either majority party. And sure, there's also a case to be made for third parties as well. I know that there's a couple of candidates who have run in the past who have seemed, at the very least, genuinely interesting. But they do not have the economic or the political clout to reach anywhere near the platform that the two major parties of this country do. So in the meantime, yeah, don't get me wrong, I know what voting tastes like now, and I have since the age of 18. Voting tastes like the blood between my teeth when I have to grit my jaw and vote for somebody that I know I'm not going to like at the end of the day, or who isn't going to pass all the policies that they quote-unquote promise to get through. And then there comes the other side of it, which is, once the ballot is in the box, what are you going to do next?
Well, and I want to clarify to the listener, I'm kind of taking a particular tack because I honestly believe it, but I do vote too. But I want to remind the voter of something that's very important, which is that even if it feels hopeless on a national scale, your vote does have an actual effect on local policies and local politics. I would encourage you not to sit in the coming election out and to vote both locally and nationally, because if we don't vote at all, that right to vote could easily be taken away from us in the very near future. But if I ever loved all of the policies that somebody had when they were running for office, that person would never get elected because I'm an idealist.
There's also that, too. I have that streak. Fellow worker Gordon, you want to say something?
I just wanted to point out to the listening audience that I'm not from Washington originally. I'm from New York, where you have to go to a polling place and cast your vote in a booth and pull a lever for whatever candidate. But in Washington State, we have, in the entire state, a mail-in voting system. So if you get this envelope in the mail and it sits there on your kitchen table and you don't take the 2 minutes it takes to fill it out and sign it and send it in, then I don't know what to say about you, because, you know, I don't particularly believe in the efficacy of elections myself, but I agree with fellow worker Marilyn that on a local level, you know, it does matter who's on the school board. It does matter who the dog catcher is. It really does.
And city council. Yeah.
That's right.
They ascend up.
I heard this from Diane DePrima. She's a poet.
Yeah.
Among
beat,
other things.
A beat generation poet.
Yeah. And still, well, she's gone now. But anyway, her grandfather, it's an Italian family. And her grandfather is an anarchist from the old country. Her father and the other guys would sit in the kitchen drinking wine and talking Democrat politics because they're in New York. And the old man is sitting in the corner by himself saying, boys, boys, boys. Do you think it's important when you step into that ballot box and pull the lever? Ha. What matters is who sets the price of money. You know what that means? Who sets the price of money? Who is that, by the way?
Is the Fed?
Janet Yellen.
That's right.
Anybody ever vote for her?
Good point. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, and it matters. It matters how the economy goes. Money is cheap. Expansion. It gets too hot. They close it down. The price of money goes up, and less borrowing goes on, and people lose jobs.
So I had one last thing that I wanted to remind the listener of. I got an interesting piece of mail the other day, and I opened it up to see what it was. And I think this is an attempt by Republicans in the right wing to to start to clamp down on our voting rights, I had to prove that I still live in my house and I'm a voter. And I had to fill out the form and turn it back in.
Who sent this to you? Who did you turn it into? Who did you send it to?
It was government, Washington State.
.gov.
It wasn't an email. It was a regular mail. Yeah.
And if you don't send it in, you don't get to vote?
You'll be knocked off the vote.
That sounds fishy as hell.
I haven't gotten it.
Yeah. That's vote harvesting.
And I haven't heard anybody else who got it, so maybe it might be fishing. One thing about those ballots that some people may not realize is that in the whole state of Washington, you don't have to pay postage on it.
Yes.
Right. Just fill it out and be sure to sign the outside, because they won't count it if you don't sign the outside and date it. But also there's those drop boxes.
And that gives away your anonymity. I've resented that forever.
Right. But there's ballot drop boxes, and so those, they don't have them all over the country. They've reduced them quite a few. In Texas, you might have to drive 200 miles to find a ballot box to drop your ballot into. But anyway, in Washington we have pretty clean elections. I've known people who volunteered to help count and stuff for years,
and said,
these are among the most clean elections in the state. But anyway, just a little couple words about your ballots. Don't have to pay for postage to mail them in.
And I guess the not the argument, but the point that I'm also hoping to convey to the listener too is that even if for me, my other perspective on electoral politics is that, like I said earlier, it's basically for a personal policy of my own that whatever harm reduction I can do is probably something worth pursuing. And so every time I have to vote for, you know, a candidate who speaks to the policies that I hope that they pass, obviously things like green energy, better LGBT protections, better protections for other marginalized communities, you know, better policy towards organized labor, obviously, where this is a union radio show, we might as well mention it. And even if I don't feel like they're going to follow through on the way, at the very least, they won't be as actively harmful as the more reactionary and conservative elements in electoral politics, who are getting much more emboldened and, frankly, kind of brazen with how well they are able to crack down on all of the people and all of the things that I care about.
That's a very good lens, in my opinion, through which to view this issue. You put it in terms of harm reduction.
Right.
You know, is it better to allow a person to die of a heroin overdose, or is it better to give this person, who obviously has other problems, you know, a dose of Naxalone to save their life?
Yeah.
It's harm reduction.
Right.
And disease prevention, harm reduction, minimizing, interfacing with the police, all that stuff. I appreciate that viewpoint.
Right.
If only right-wing fundamentalism was a curable disease.
Unfortunately, it's not. I mean, I know plenty of people who are, you know, definitely to the political left where I am, whether you want to call them socialists, communists, anarchists, or whatever, who also have this particular perspective either. Because while, yes, there are socialist and communist parties in this country that you can vote for, they're probably only, from the most recent couple of national elections we've had, they're barely scraping 0.5% of the voting population, which, again, is only approximately 2/3 of the country. There's still an entire third that just does not bother to show up and vote. Fellow worker Lynn?
Following up on voting issues, if you have not registered to vote and you are of age legally and citizen-wise, don't wait until November to register to vote. Register to vote, and you can do that in many ways, but one way would be to ask the county, auditor for a ballot to be sent to you, a registration form. And it's a very short, simple form to fill out. And then you're registered, and then you can vote. And be sure, read your voter's pamphlet. They send that out for the voter to be informed. And read stuff, in particular the local stuff. Find out what your local county is doing, the fire department, the school district, the
See
mayor.
See what the League of Women Voters says.
That's right.
Isn't it possible to still get a voter registration form from the post office?
Probably.
And you can get it at the motor vehicle office.
And City Hall and pretty much any...
Not City Hall.
You can't?
No. But you can get it at the assessor's office. You can just walk in and get it.
Okay.
You can get it at the motor vehicle office. And League of, if you know anybody in the League of Women Voters, they're walking around with stacks of voter registrations.
It's not that hard to register.
Yeah. And This may be the time when you have to vote for the lesser of two evils. Hopefully, you won't be so purist that you throw the election away.
Right. And also, just to, again, just to leave off on my part on this point, is once your ballot is in the box, if you really feel like you have to vote for the lesser evil in the situation, then go ahead and do it. But your ability to impact the working conditions of your coworkers or the working conditions of the people in your city don't have to end there. The Democratic Socialists have done a fantastic campaign here to limit the powers that landlords have over their tenants. They passed a really progressive tenants' rights bill in the previous local elections here in the city of Tacoma, and I want to definitely give credence to Marilyn's point that, you know, local politics is incredibly important. Even if you don't like the other, the two people who are currently running for president, like fellow worker Gordon said, you can still choose who sits on the school board. You can still choose who's going to be, you know, overlooking the police department, overlooking how the city's budget is being handled, things like that.
You know, you're doing a segue to
and
my
and contrarily to that, the presidential election is more important than it's ever been. And you'll hear people saying that, but it's very true. You're not just determining what's going to happen for the next 4 years. You're going to be determining who puts people onto the Supreme Court. And that has everything to do with people's everyday lives, including abortion, including
voting rights, worker safety, voting rights,
so many everything. Issues. So it's not just the next 4 years that you'll be voting for. It's way into the future, your kids, your grandkids.
So before we transition out to something else, we've talked about the two major party candidates, and there's those others that are also playing the game. Mm-hmm. Is Jill Stein running again?
Yep.
Yes.
For okay, the there Jill Stein.
Cornell West.
Well, you beat me to it because I wanted to squeeze in that Kennedy guy.
Oh, RFK no.
Jr. Mr. Novax.
Mr. Brainworms.
Who's he?
RFK Jr.
Who is he going to draw votes from? Away from, by the way. People who would vote for Trump, maybe? Or would it be Biden?
What party does he say he's from? Anything?
He's independent, I guess.
He's an independent. Of course, his name recognition makes people presuppose, because that whole clan. And they're, I didn't mean clan with a K, I meant with a C. But that whole family is huge, and they've always been involved in Democratic politics for 100 years.
That's right.
And but now, they've all come out and denounced him, the whole family.
Right.
I don't know how many maybe didn't, but the majority of the family.
How many average voters know that his family have denounced him?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying that that's a fact that I've understood. Yeah.
And then there is Dr. Cornell West, who, mm-hmm. if I had to waste my vote, I'd vote for him.
Yeah.
And this is a protest. I saw a commercial on television. He says, I'm an abolitionist. Mm-hmm. Abolish poverty, abolish homelessness, abolish the absence of medical care. He says all the right things, and who's going to vote for him? That's the problem.
Yeah.
I think. But you too?
I'm going to vote for him.
Maybe I will.
I guess if we are going to...
Listeners should be told that you are joking. They may not know.
No, I'm
okay,
not.
I can't presume.
That's right, you shouldn't.
I think if we are going to transition out of this topic onto the next point of roundtable discussion here, the one thing that I have to shout out to the listener is, if you really don't like who's running for president, whether or not you're voting, if you really don't like the situation that the country is in and you want to do something more than electoral politics, probably one of the best ways you can immediately affect the rest of your waking life is to be a part of the labor movement. And I want to hone this in, especially because, you know, as the IWW, we don't endorse candidates, we don't endorse political parties, we don't give money or credence to either major political faction or any political faction in this country. We are concerned first and foremost with helping you organize your shop for better wages, hours, conditions, and workplace democracy, most importantly. You can sign up to the IWW and learn how to organize your workplace today. You can even sign on to another trade union if you feel like that's beneficial to your workplace or if that's what your workers want. Either way, get involved in the labor movement, because there is a huge upsurge in worker organizing and the demand for workplace democracy and economic democracy in this country. And it's probably one of the most influential ways you can make local or even just shop-based changes that affect the rest of your life. Go ahead.
And for those who are retired or for those who are unemployed, it's a very important message that you can still get involved in the labor movement. If you were a member of a union for years and years and retired, you can still get with the pensioners or retirees section of that union. And if you don't want to do that, if you don't like them, join IWW, because we're for all, a union for all workers. And you don't even have to have had a traditional job. You know,
and you could be a member of both unions.
Yes. Well, we accept dual cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it was brought to our attention amongst ourselves that were a couple of things that we did not cover in our conversation about the election. One was the issue of the U.S. complicity in sending arms to Israel to use against the Gazans.
Right. We did touch on it very briefly, but
right.
We could expand on it.
And people wanted to talk about that more. So I will just lead this discussion briefly with a little rant. 4th of July, I was listening to all the fireworks going off in my neighborhood in addition to the city fireworks. And looking at my dog and how terrified she was and how pissed off I was. And then it occurred to me, here I am with the luxury of listening to fireworks, but in Gaza, it's not fireworks, it's live ammo. And the number of children that have been killed, the number of journalists that have been targeted, what the policy is toward the Gazans is so bestial. And we are so complicit in it if we allow our government to use our tax money to send weaponry to Israel and try to justify the scale of what they are doing. And the question in terms of electoral politics, which we touched upon but didn't really spell out, is what is Biden thinking? Why is he allowing that to happen when so many people are so outspoken in their distaste for what the U.S.'s role is in Israel?
I've got a suggestion.
Yeah.
Which may be AIPAC. I looked this up the other night. Genocide Joe has received $40 million from AIPAC in his career.
That's nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of money.
And when you leave office, if you don't spend it, you get to take it with you. I think that's how the... Yes. If someone makes a contribution to a political candidate, it goes into their re-election fund, right?
That's what I thought.
And they don't spend it all. There's money left over, and you're no longer a Congress critter.
Wow.
You take it home with you.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I thought they had to give it back.
That was how Trump enriched himself.
To whom do you give it?
Hmm.
We'd split that up.
Shit, I ought to run for Congress, and I could use the money.
If anyone would donate to you. a second thought. I'm sorry, I've forgotten her name. Who runs the AFL-CIO now? She came from SEIU.
Yeah, I forget.
Well, she's unforgettable. Yeah, she's forgettable. She has declared that local groups, smaller union groups, labor councils, county or state, are not to take a policy decision on Gaza and the ceasefire. She's the decider, as that Bush guy said.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Who made her God?
The AFLs.
Yeah.
Elected her at a convention where apparently... I mean,
and what is her decision?
That
I'll tell you what you're in favor of.
Right. That local labor groups and regional labor councils cannot take a position on Gaza or what? Are they going to be expelled or something? Or
I don't know. She hasn't. Mason, Thurston, Lewis County Labor Council passed these are the young bloods. Passed a resolution. Requesting, or their position is, ceasefire now.
Yeah.
Let's get milk to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get medicine to the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get food for the people. And they came down on them and said, you don't do that.
That's right.
We're the deciders, not you. And I believe she may be a Zionist.
Well, I believe you may be right.
You may be right.
Yeah.
I can't make that judgment either.
Now, the 27th Legislative District surprised me. And they voted 88% for ceasefire now.
I read that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what good it'll do, I don't know.
Well, if there's more and more and more of us
who
say that, maybe.
Maybe Biden will listen. Maybe.
Well, $40 million is a lot of cheese, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of the listening part, especially when we're talking specifically about the Liberal Party, the Democratic Party, that is currently having a huge internal debate about what they're going to be doing about Gaza, despite millions of people in this country telling them that they want to cease fire, that they want medical aid, they want food aid. I don't really believe... I've stopped believing in the idea that we can quote-unquote push these politicians to the left. I think that we can at least pressure them. I think that you can definitely call your congressperson or your local representatives. I think you can contact your local labor councils or local labor unions to try and adopt a position that requests a ceasefire in Gaza. But I think it's, again, going to take some form of larger organization, and that's where I look to the labor movement, because despite what the president of the AFL-CIO said... Despite that, a lot of local labor councils and labor unions have said that we want a ceasefire. And even though you're trying to tell us on a national level that we can't make that decision, we're going to go ahead and make that decision anyway. You know, and that's a pretty effective form of protest, is to say, no, we're not going to comply. We're going to adopt this resolution on the anyhow. You know,
I think whether we win or lose or not, the fact that it's done, it's been said, you know, that's important. You know?
Yes.
And of course, the result is important, too. But just the fact that visibly and vocally we make our opinions, our feelings, our demands and our desires known.
We don't just shut up and take it.
That's right. That's what I think.
We have a duty to stand up. Yeah.
You put that even better than I could. It's our duty, I think, as decent human beings, hopefully.
Do we want to move on to the Charter Review Commission?
Well, I think the other part was whether or not he was competent.
Oh, dear. Mm.
Yeah. And what would happen if he loses?
Well, if he loses...
We're all going to die.
We are anyway, so there.
As the optimist at the table, I hope I'm not the only optimist. As the optimist at the table, I think one of the few things that did dull the edge of Trump's previous administration was the amount of organizing that took place on a community basis, on a local basis, on a national basis, whether that was in the labor movement, whether that was in movements for social justice and economic justice.
It sure mobilized people.
It mobilized people. So, yes, it would be really bad if Trump got elected. Do not be naive. A lot of things would get gutted from the federal government. And again, a lot of the legislative policies that the Republicans want to push through would be immensely destructive to a lot of communities.
And a lot of us would be criminalized.
But that doesn't mean that you don't have a capacity to act. Which again, brings me to my previous point of, if you still want to make change once your ballot's in the box, go try to organize your workplace. Go meet up with other community or activist organizations that are campaigning on a lot of these issues, whether that's the situation of the Palestinians in Gaza, whether that's for green energy and climate justice, whether that's for labor unions. Join the IWW, organize your workplace. You have a million different outlets that are available for you to be politically and economically involved that aren't specifically beginning and ending with a ballot going into a box. It's kind of... You kind of have to.
And if you're listening locally, I'm going to do a little segue.
Go ahead.
If you're listening locally, something that might interest you in the Tacoma area is that once every 10 years, a charter review commission is established to go over the Tacoma City Charter and make recommendations about changes and amendments. This just happened. And our current Charter Review Committee has made a list of 4 amendments or changes they want to make to the city charter. Now, interestingly enough, I went on the city site and any site I could find in preparation for this particular meeting here today. And nowhere in the city paperwork documents online is a copy of a Citizens Charter Review recommendations for this year, for 2024. I found that very interesting, because what happened is the 24 points that they made, the city, meaning the mayor and the city council, immediately put up an alternative version, which is something that they often do when they want to torpedo something that the people want. What the Charter Review Commission wants is for the Charter Review recommendations to go to the voters and the voters vote on it. The city, actually in last week's meeting, checked with their city attorney and they have three options legally. Maybe it's four. They can adopt the charter as written. They can reject the charter as written. They can bring forth each different recommendation in a different election for the people. So nickel and dime it to death until people are tired of voting. They can do what they're doing right now, which is their alternative. The things that were so inflammatory on the charter review's findings were, A, right now, when there is a police shooting of a resident, who does an investigation on whether or not their conduct was illegal or legal? The police department itself.
Mm-hmm.
There is
affairs.
No independent review.
Mm.
Number two, we have a form of government here in Tacoma with an unelected boss. That is the city manager. The city manager currently not only makes more than the governor of the state, her salary is huge, but she is not elected. She is appointed by the council. What we have is known as a weak form of mayor. What it allows the mayor and the city council to do is to deny all responsibility for their decisions. If the people demand something and it's overwhelming, they can say, oh, I'm sorry, the city manager says that's not legal. Well, if she were such a great attorney, she would not have been sued successfully so many times. But never mind that. So the city doesn't, the mayor and the city council don't want to be responsible for the decisions. They want to say, it's not us, we have no power, it's the city manager. They appoint the city manager. When you elect somebody, you can get rid of them by unelecting them. When somebody is appointed, it's much harder to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the charter has recommended getting rid of the city manager, placing the mayor in a stronger legal position. What they're basically doing is they're separating the executive and the legislative branches. Right now, they're all held by one person, the city manager. So they want a stronger mayor, and they want the city council members to be able to veto decisions of the mayor, which reins in some of the power of the mayor.
The mayor and the city manager.
There's no city manager. They want to get rid of.
Oh, okay. The new plan. Okay, so
yeah,
reins in
yeah.
the power.
Which also makes government a lot more transparent, as well as more accountable to the people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think the city council likes that very much because then they're going to be held accountable.
Yeah, they right? got to do their job.
Yeah. The third thing that I'm particularly interested in is the Charter Review Commission recommended a climate change commission.
Mm-hmm.
They've never seriously looked at the issue of climate change. They give lip service to it, but they don't really do anything. So that's something that I really wanted to talk about today. And what did you all think about this?
I know that, especially in terms of police accountability and police reform, I have heard from the DSA that they're sincerely interested in having a citizens' oversight committee for the police department whenever there is a potentially illegal action being committed by
but
the police.
But there need to be teeth in that oversight committee.
Yes, there does. It can't just be a judgment of whether or not the police did something illegal. It's we also have the power to potentially prosecute our
yes.
members of the police department if they do something illegal.
Yeah, they need to have some power, not just recommendations.
Right.
Al?
Hmm.
No?
I'm thinking.
Okay.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts as not a resident of Tacoma. I live in Bremerton. Bremerton has a strong mayor type situation.
Most cities do.
And they also have a city council,
mm-hmm.
which is open meetings. I'm not saying that a lot gets changed, but they also have a pretty strong Kitsap County Commissioner's office. They
mm-hmm.
have three commissioners, and so there's a balancing act between the commissioners. And, well, Bremerton's the largest urban center,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's some competition with our neighbors up north, Polesbo, where the rich people live, and Bainbridge Island and all that kind of stuff. But for Bremerton, the city has to be held accountable for what they do. and it's easier with that. It has always appeared to me that a city manager was very much a corporate position.
Yes.
Where they take the corporation, which is the city of Tacoma, right, which is a legally incorporated entity, and they appoint a chief financial officer by however method they do. And
I'm nodding, listener. And
I'm preaching to the choir here, listeners, but what I'm getting at is that a city manager, to me, has always been some kind of cop-out. City managers bring on things like the Flint public water supply system. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if you run government like a business, it's going to act like a business, and it's going to cut corners, cut staff, and to them, maximizing shareholder value, or however you want to put it, maximizing profit margins, is in the form of power, and sometimes salaries too.
As my friend Jem and I said in the meeting, which I loved, she said, we have a city manager. I don't want to be managed. I want to participate.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, speaking of small politics, down at the local level, what we want is we want the Charter Review Commission's recommendations to go to the Tacoma voters as is, without tinkering by the city council. Mm-hmm. And if you ever thought your vote didn't matter, now it does. The final reading is this coming Tuesday, and this probably won't be on the air by then. But this is something important that's happening, and you should check it out and see how this goes down. And if you get the opportunity to vote, don't be fooled by a fake city charter review ballot, because it may sound good.
It's a Potemkin Village type situation.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a chance for your vote absolutely would matter.
So I'd like to return to the police accountability, and I have questions that I can't remember what I want to talk about. What's it called when a police officer kills someone in the line of duty, and it's called what? You don't have to get in trouble for that?
Justifiable homicide?
No, yeah. No, no. There's another word. It's
self-defense?
No, no. Those are simple.
Legal use of force?
No, it's a technical term, means you're not responsible for what you do if you do it while you're on duty.
Oh, qualified immunity.
There we go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And this is not Pierce County. It's in Auburn, I guess. Is that Pierce County? The cop that was on trial, he killed his third civilian.
Jesse Saray.
What happened to his trial?
He was found guilty.
What's going to happen?
We don't know yet.
They haven't got around to giving him 60 days?
Yeah, but that was going on for, what, 4 or 5 years? Talk about justice.
One patient a year or one victim a year?
One what?
One victim a year. I mean, how many people did he kill? Killed? How long was the spread?
I don't know.
Every other year?
Yeah. Clearly a road cop. And he was found guilty. Now let's find out how he gets sentenced.
I raised that rhetorical question. Thank you.
Okay. And that was
Keep our eyes. Keep our eyes open for that one.
He'll retire to Texas and get a job as a sheriff down
there. Well, anyhow, that murder victim was Jesse Saray.
A Cambodian.
Yeah. Yeah. The grannies went up and sang for him. We wrote a song.
Fellow workers and listeners, I'm going to give you a brief report about the Centralia tragedy, which occurred in 1919. Over 100 years ago. And what happened is that the IWW Union Hall was attacked during the middle of a parade for the first Armistice Day on November 11th. And the Wobblies had suffered previous attacks, but this one got real serious. And so a couple of the American Legion men got shot because there was a firefight between the IWW and the American Legion. Doesn't matter who started it. You know how these things go. So anyway, one of the Wobblies was taken out of prison, and they turned all the lights in the city off. Wonder how that happened. And this man was lynched. His name was fellow worker Wesley Everest, and he was still wearing parts of his World War I soldier uniform. He got drafted into the army because he was a logger, and he didn't go to France. They kept him in the United States so he could continue harvesting lumber. Except that it was for the government.
Airplanes.
Yes, to make airplanes out of spruce. As a matter of fact, they called the outfit informally the Spruce Brigade. So anyway, the whole tragedy was about these American Legion men who got killed, and one of our guys who got lynched, brutally lynched, and about 10 other guys who ended up in prison for long periods of time.
And you are currently listening to Radio Tacoma 101.9 FM KTAH.
And so we've been fighting, the union's been fighting for 100 years, and it was a bad trial. I mean, you know the story. It was all set up. They moved the venue to Montesano, and they got railroaded into prison, and they went to hard time, Walla Walla, I do believe.
Yes, they were in the walls.
Yeah, and that's hard time. Mm-hmm. And several of them did way over, you know, like I'd say an average of about 10 years in prison. So
one of them died there.
One of them died in prison. Of course, our guy who was lynched, one of them went nuts, you know, that's to charitably put it, went insane, as they said. And so this was a brutal railroad job on the IWW simply because they did not like us. And they didn't like us because we challenged their authority as capitalists. And so we've been trying to redress this grievous situation. So in 1924, the American Legion paid for and put up this huge monument, which is still there in George Washington Park in Centralia, Washington. And it's been there since for 100 years. Finally, this year, the IWW got to install. We had to pay for it. We collected money for it, and we paid for it, and we bought the stone, and we got the preparation, and we got some volunteer labor. And finally, we got the monument put up, and one of our fellow workers covered it with a red cloth, and we had a ceremony that unveiled the monument. So it's a beautiful plaque, and I recommend that anybody visit Centralia and look for the big monument in the park, and then cat a corner to it is ours.
And what I can add to that is I was not present at the unveiling. I was there prior to that when Labor's Union 252, the folks who were organizing the mushroom workers, two members who are the apprentice laborers trainers.
Right.
They came down, they dug the hole. Phil helped. Yeah, sent me to the shovel. You were there, right?
Yeah, I took a shovel. Yeah.
Okay, and poured the cement, which, by the way, was donated by two local businesses. We got gravel and cement for free.
Hmm. Yep, and the labor for free.
Yes, that was their contribution. And a couple of days later, the stone finally arrived from Vietnam.
Ironically.
And it had been shaped to similar to the base of the Sentinel. For the four men that were killed, the four Legionnaires. And I watched them install the stone on the pad. And then a couple of days later, it was a week or two later? Yeah.
Yeah.
You had the official ceremony.
And, it was the 23rd, wasn't it?
It was 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
Okay, that helps.
Anyway, I believe that we've righted a wrong that's been going on for a long time. And that's a secret wound in that town, that there's still bitterness between folks who think it's okay to kill union people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And folks who belong to unions that don't like that idea.
Yeah.
And that's what the Legion, years ago, they had a convention in Texas, and they invited Mussolini to attend to give him an award for making the trains run on time and busting the unions.
Mm-hmm.
This is back in the 30s, I take it.
Yes.
Okay.
For the Mussolini guy, yeah, right.
No, it's Jimmy Mussolini.
And their policy hasn't changed that much. It's a pretty conservative outfit.
Very conservative. Ironically, their Legion Hall is yards away from where the monument sits. There was some sizable worry among some of the Wobblies that the monument was going to get defaced. That hasn't happened yet.
Good.
Yeah.
And that's because someone's been defacing the other monument for decades.
I wonder who.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Nobody else does.
But the thing was, about 50 or 60 people showed up. That's a pretty good estimate. Yeah. 50 or 60 people showed up, you know, and I recognized some faces from around Puget Sound because there were Wobblies. But then the Master Ceremonies, fellow worker Tuck, did something to me that was very surprising. Okay, well, a poem was read, a song was sung. You know, and with very simple ceremony. But at the end of it, he said, are there any Centralia residents present in the crowd.
Oh.
And several people, like maybe 20 people, mm-hmm. came to the front of the crowd where we, you know, were assembled in the park. And Tuck addressed them and said, since there's no representative of the Centralia city government or the town council or the mayor or anything, we, the IWW, are presenting this monument to you, the citizens of Centralia, to look after and keep. This is, you know, we paid for it and we're donating it to you. And I thought that was extremely significant because then the people of Centralia are invested in it and they'll help keep it, you know, on the fair and square.
That was brilliant.
Pretty good rhetorical device.
Yeah.
Did you submit any of the photos you took to the group?
I only took a couple, and I sent them to Tuck.
Okay.
And
I took a few too.
Phil took a lot of them, but I had difficulty opening up the file. Go ahead.
If you would like to see some of these photos, because I know they've been posted to the Tacoma IWW social media pages that we have, they should be posted up on our Facebook page for the Tacoma IWW, as well as our Instagram page as well. They weren't posted too long ago, so
okay.
If you want to go take a look at some of the photos from the unveiling of the plaque, you can go ahead and check those out. Yeah.
It was emotional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I go down there every year to visit Wesley Everest's grave, and I have for the past few years now.
Yeah.
And now we have another monument. And we also did the last Centralia memorial service that essentially we held for the union members who were persecuted and were lynched in the case of Wesley Everest. They actually did a really cool street tour of all the historical locations of the
right.
Centralia tragedy. And we did a couple of graveside visits to a lot of the fellow workers that are still buried down there, including the people who were locked up. And also Wesley Everest's grave as well,
mm-hmm.
which is looked after by some local townsfolk as well as the Wobblies who drop through.
And it's a pretty pitiful sight, actually, when you go there, especially on November 11th, which is the anniversary date of fellow worker Wesley Everest's lynching and, of course, this terrible tragedy that happened. But it's a potter's field, if any of the listeners are familiar with that term. He was buried by the United States Army. Because he was a soldier or a veteran, and they gave him a really poor, miserable little headstone right at the edge of the potter's field, which is a burial ground for
indigent people.
Thank you. And it was very depressing. But over the years, the local population and a bunch of Wobblies who come from around the region go down there and we spruce the thing up. You know, we clean it. You know, I started putting in the Jewish tradition, even though Wesley wasn't Jewish, I put a little pebble on top of his grave marker. There's been an additional grave marker that was put in by the IWW. And we clean the area up, clean all the trash that, you know, it's right next to the road. So you're going to get road trash.
Wow. I've been putting pebbles down there, too.
Have you?
Yeah.
I was wondering who all the other Jews were. And
I just brought whiskey and cigarettes.
Yeah, I brought whiskey myself. See, I'm not a religious observant Jew, okay? But what I'm getting at is that it's been taken care of by local people. And it has become something of a, I don't know, a talisman, something of a marker for IWW history, just like the graves in Chicago.
Am I wrong that some of the Wobblies have identified some of the graves
that
hadn't been identified before?
Mm-hmm.
We actually have essentially what you could call a subcommittee within a couple of different branches, I believe, who are currently trying to research all of the Wobbly grave sites that are all over the country that have been destituted or left unmarked or whose graves haven't been taken care of.
Hmm.
There's kind of a fund of money within the IWW to give a lot of these people a proper headstone with the IWW logo on it as well, similar to the one that Wesley Everest has on a small little plaque at the base of his headstone. There are some fellow workers down in Centralia who have gotten those plaques, but there is a committee of people trying to find the rest of them.
Also, an idea was brought up. We had a little bit of extra money left over from our GoFundMe page and from donations from all over the country. So there was I don't know exactly how much was left in there, but a suggestion was made that a walking tour could be made, invented somehow by one of the computer whiz kids and... where you could actually walk around town with your iPhone or your smartphone and and have a little narrative, like a museum tour or
that's
something.
That's good.
It's a good idea. I don't know who's going to pick up the ball, because the idea was from another old wobbly, and frankly, we don't know how to do that kind of stuff. But I'm sure there are people in the IWW who would be happy to take that on. Not Noah.
I got enough on my plate as it is.
I always wonder whether the listener, each listener, understands what WOB is and wobbly. I don't think we explained it at the beginning of this radio hour, but IWW members have been known for 100 years as wobblies, and so this WOB radio reflects that name of wobblies.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lynn.
Right, and the origin of the nickname wobbly is kind of apocryphal. I like the one about that the IWWs used to eat a lot of Chinese food because it was cheap and plentiful, right? And so I don't know if this is a real story or not.
Do you mind if I explain it? Because I can actually provide a little bit of context.
Go ahead.
So especially for the Vancouver, BC Wobblies, and this is as far as I can recall the story, a lot of the Vancouver, BC Wobblies had their essentially union hall near where the Chinatown was. And they'd, like you said, they would often go out to eat Chinese food, or they were familiar with a lot of the local Chinese residents. And one of the local Chinese residents, who I believe remains unnamed, tried to pronounce the name IWW, or the acronym IWW, but he couldn't pronounce the words very well because he was a recent immigrant to the country. So he pronounced it I wobble wobble.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, wobbly.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were on strike and you had a red card, you go to his restaurant and eat for free.
That's right. Yes. The guy extended credit to all those who... And when we say red card, it means our traditional union book.
Dues book.
Where we get... Well, we modernized a little bit. I carry the plastic one because they can take money right out of my bank account. But the union book is called a red card.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the local events that I've been doing research in. For all of us folks here in the Tacoma metropolitan area and the wider Pierce County area, Tacoma Pride is coming up. That is going to be the weekend of the 13th and 14th. I, fellow worker Noah, am actually going to be boothing with one of our radio broadcasters, KTQA. I don't have an exact location as to where our tabling is going to be yet, but if you find the KTQA booth, you're absolutely welcome to swing by and say hi. Another event coming up later in the month, and this is something that I personally encourage you to RSVP for, is the Workers' Rights Summit that's coming up soon. So this is being broadcast by a number of local unions and being hosted by a number of local labor organizations. This is coming from UFCW 367. To RSVP today for the Workers' Rights Summit. In Olympia, it will be July 20th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., and that's going to be at the Olympia Center, 222 Columbia Street, Northwest. In Tacoma, it's going to be taking place on July 27th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., and that's going to be at Evergreen Tacoma at 1210 6th Avenue. You can RSVP locally through Tacoma for All's website. You can also find a link to RSVP through UFCW Local 367's website, as well as Thurston Lewis Mason Central Labor Council. You can find the links to it on their Facebook pages. Basically, the Workers' Rights Summit is going to be essentially UFCW 367 members will join our customers, neighbors, and all workers to launch our fight for fair wages, guaranteed hours, and safe working conditions for all workers. Winning a strong contract will only be possible if our community and customers, the financial lifeblood of our employers, are 100% behind us. That's why we are building a coalition to win a workers' bill of rights in Tacoma, Olympia, and across the region.
Mm.
So I highly recommend that our fellow listeners go find that RSVP link. Yes, fellow worker Al?
My notes here say July 28th. I thought I heard you say July 27th.
Apologies. Yeah. It is...
It is the 28th?
No, it's the 27th.
It's the 27th.
The air is here. Okay.
And one more time, that's going to be in Olympia, July 20th, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. In Olympia, it's going to be at the Olympia Center, 222 Columbia Street, Northwest. Here in Tacoma, it's going to be July 27th, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at Evergreen Tacoma, 1210 6th Avenue.
And if you're interested in a person who is running to replace Derek Kilmer for a representative of the 6th Congressional District. There is a meet and greet on the 10th, and that will be to meet Emily Randall, who's running for that position, and it will be at the Rusty Goat at 712 Court C in Tacoma, and it's at 5:30 to 7:30. And moving on.
Just to clarify, Emily Randall is a sitting state senator. She's out lesbian, and she is very active in Kitsap County. The 26th Congressional District that Derek Kilmer represents encompasses Bremerton and Kitsap County and all the way out to Grays Harbor.
On Saturday, July 13th, from 12 till 2:30, there is, I cannot pronounce this, but it is the Water is Life series, sponsored by 350 and the Puyallup Tribe. And they will meet at 311 Puyallup Avenue in Tacoma, 98421. First, they'll meet for lunch. Then they'll go out to the little swamp area that they are restoring on the tide flats. And that's been an ongoing thing that they've been doing. Then further, so that's your environmental stuff. Then, let's see, Art on the Ave, and that's just an opportunity to be in solidarity with small business owners and craftspeople and creative people. That will be on Sunday, July 21st, Monday, July 22nd, from 12 till 7. A group that I'm involved with, Radio Tacoma, will have a table there, and you're welcome to come by. Radio Tacoma sponsors WAB Radio, and we'd love to meet you. And if you want to volunteer, we'd love to have you do that. So that's the 21st and 27th on 6th Avenue downtown. Then it's August, so the last thing I wanted to remind the listener of is that Veterans for Peace is bringing their sailboat, the Golden Rule, to Tacoma August 12th and for 13th. We will be on, approximately 705 Dock Street. The Golden Rule is not a very big sailboat, but the purpose of the Golden Rule is to educate people about the folly of nuclear weapons and war. And we will have a list of speakers and entertainments. One of the groups that will be down there that should interest anybody who's wanting to look at the harm that the whole nuclear industry does, nuclear weaponry industry does, is we will have children from the Marshall Islands be there speaking. And the event will be free, and I believe we will be giving rides to people who want to go out on the bay.
In that vein, if I can add, the group is called Ground Zero, and it is Ground Zero Center for Peace. And these folks have a compound right up against the fence for the Bangor Trident submarine base. And they have a couple of actions they do every year, one on Mother's Day and one on Hiroshima Day, which is August the 6th. And they have a demonstration at the gate of the Bangor submarine base. And they usually do some kind of pro forma die-in type thing. They'll lie in the road and they'll get ritually arrested, and they're a bunch of really good people. They have kind of a religious orientation, but they've been doing the grunt work against nuclear weapons. And just as a historical note, right where I live, just a few miles from where I live, has the largest concentration of stored nuclear weapons and nuclear reactors in the country. So it's a pretty important issue. If you're interested in eliminating nuclear weapons, go to their website, go to their Facebook page. It's called Ground Zero Center for Peace.
So one of the people that's been involved in bringing the Golden Rule here is a person who works for Physicians for Social Responsibility, Sean Arendt. And Sean will be getting back from Hiroshima the day before this event happens. And Arendt? By the way, he's running for office.
His last name is Arendt?
A-R-E-N-T.
Pretty close to Hannah Arendt.
Right, but no relation. I asked him.
Okay.
On the 24th of August is the Hilltop Street Fair. And that's a multicultural celebration, diversity celebration. And it's from 11 till 7. It will not be on MLK Street this year because now we have the rail car going through. So I believe it's on either J or L Street. But there'll be more information on that. So that's all I've got for right now.
Alrighty, fellow workers, that is the conclusion of today's broadcast of WOB Radio. If you're interested in joining the IWW or getting connected with a local delegate, if you want to sign up, you can always find us at IWW.org, and you can use the branch search tab in order to find Tacoma IWW's email if you want to reach out. You can also reach out to us through our Facebook or Instagram pages as well if you're interested in getting involved, if you want to organize your workplace. We want to thank all of our fellow listeners from 101.9 Radio Tacoma, KTAH, 95.3 KTQA in Tacoma, as well as 94.9 KZAX up in Bellingham. Thank you so much for listening, and solidarity.